federalnewsradio.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And I've been playing another week with Google Glass.
Have you really? And nobody got hurt?
No, but, you know, I've got to be careful where I wear these things. It is very, you know, it does actually disturb people when you wear them around.
It's a strange look.
Yeah, because, you know.
Is that what you mean, that people don't know what you're doing or what you're wearing?
Well, they don't know whether I'm photographing them or not. They don't know whether I'm taking
movies. Do people know that it's Google Glass, or do they?
People are kind of recognize that, mm-hmm. that it's Google Glass.
That maybe it's not some sort of medical appliance or something along the
No, people recognize it. Now, you know, some people, they say I have Google Glass and they start dancing because they want to make a good video.
Do you wear them while you're wearing your regular glasses, or do you just wear those?
I just wear these. Mm-hmm. Okay, it turns out, you know, I don't have lenses in the Google Glass mm-hmm. that I'm working because I only need glasses to read. So
okay.
When I'm driving, I don't use glasses.
Okay.
And the monitor that I see, the virtual monitor that I see with Google Glass, it's like a 25-inch monitor a couple of feet out in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
So that monitor is actually in focus for me.
Oh, no kidding.
So I can see that monitor. I can see the far field. And so I don't need my glasses at all.
I've never even thought about that. That's a good point.
So it's actually in the far field,
yeah.
and it's everything's perfectly in focus when I look through Google Glass. So I think there could be a problem if you need glasses to see long distances.
Mm-hmm.
But then you see you're actually looking. The lens is actually behind the beam splitter. So if you put lenses in here, everything might work.
Okay.
So anyway, I don't. But people look at me a little peculiarly, and you have to be very careful about what you upload inadvertently.
Yes.
And there was a lot of stuff going on in technology. Probably the biggest thing, FCC has extended their comment period on net neutrality.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'll talk briefly about that. I'd like everybody to comment on that. We don't want them to make the wrong decision. This week we're going to feature the father of secure socket layer, the father of SSL. This, of course, is the encryption technique that's used to give you privacy when you're communicating to a website. His name is Tahir El-Gamal. And, of course, it was a huge, huge mailbag.
Giant.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Oh, wow. Boy, I tell you, that's giant.
That's a lot of lifting.
It's a lot of lifting, yeah. These are extremely, extremely heavy, heavy electrons. We got an email from Ken Myers. Love your show. I keep missing it, but then I know you've got a podcast. Thank you so much. Please put the time and day and station call letters on your EDU website. It would make it a lot easier for most people to find where you live. I prefer live radio listening. Of course, I found it for some reason. And I thought you were live on Sundays, proving that I need more education. Thanks again for a great show, Ken Myers. Well, the time actually is on the Tech Talk webpage. You don't go to stratford.edu. You can go to techtalkonline.com, which is one of the back pages of the Stratford website. And the time is there. It's, of course, 1500 a.m. In the Washington, D.C. area at 9 a.m. Now, the easiest way to listen to it, I think, is just using your smartphone. I download the TuneIn Radio app. The TuneIn Radio app, which is what Federal News Radio is on.
Mm-hmm.
Other radio stations use the iHeart Radio app, but we're on the TuneIn Radio app. So you download that to your Android phone or your smartphone, and then just search for Federal News Radio. Then you just turn on that app. Go to Federal News Radio at 9 a.m. Saturday morning,
Saturday.
And you can listen to the show anywhere in the world.
Yep.
And so it's extremely convenient to do that. Thanks for listening, Ken, and I'm glad you really liked the show. We got an email from Arnie in Crownsville, Maryland. Arnie's a long-term listener. Hi, Dr. Schertz. I saw this story on BBC News. Users of the Darknet service, Tor, who visited hidden websites, may have had their identities revealed by a five-month-long cyber attack. Now, this Tor thing, T-O-R, has been showing a lot of interest recently. I sent you a couple of emails about it. I mean, this is where the Soviets are trying to hack it. I mean, who actually uses Tor? It seems like governments have a lot of interest. Are there any particular common people like me would be using it? What's the whole thing about? Thanks, Arnie in Crownsville, Maryland. Well, Tor is an interesting story. Tor was originally designed and implemented and deployed as the third generation Onion Router project of the U.S. Naval Research Lab. So it was developed by the government, by NRL. And it's called TOR stands for the Onion Router. That's what it stands for, because it was layers of encryption. And layers, you would have this network where you go from one place to another place, to another, and it was sort of layered. Your identity was layered, and so it was like peeling back an onion to try to find you. So that's where the name originally came from. But the acronym's no longer used by the developers. So it was developed by the NRL, and actually it's used for a wide variety of purposes, just by normal people, military people use it, journalists use it, law enforcement officers use it, activists use it, and many others. Now, Tor is actually a network of virtual tunnels and virtual servers that are run by volunteers around the world, and it just tunnels your information from one server to another server, and it cascades it. So it would be very hard. Would be very hard to track you down after you've cascaded through 8 or 9 servers on this network. So Tor provides a foundation for a wide range of applications that allow organizations and individuals to share information over public networks without compromising privacy. Now, Tor can be used just by individuals if you want to keep people from tracking the kind of website you're looking at. Or if you don't want people to track all what you're doing on instant messaging, you can keep all that. You can keep all that local to yourself. Or if you want to go to a particular website that's blocked, either by where you're working or by the country where you're at. Journalists use this a lot, especially when they are communicating with whistleblowers or with dissidents who don't want to be tracked. They want to keep their anonymous location, their name and all. It's used by journalists a lot. Non-government organizations use it to allow workers, NGOs, to allow workers to connect to the home website while they're visiting a foreign country without notifying everybody nearby that they work with that organization. See, if they, it may be that they're in a dangerous country. People don't know they work for this particular NGO, and they want to go back to the home website. They go back through Tor, and nobody can tell what's going on. Activist groups use it, like the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and they recommend it. They recommend that as a great mechanism for maintaining civil liberties. They think it's part of sort of their libertarian sort of agenda, where you want to keep government out of your business. It was used by Edward Snowden exclusively.
Huh.
Because he didn't want his boss, the NSA, to track what he was up to. Now, he used the anonymous operating system Tails, which is the companion operating system that goes with Tor. So he would have Tails on a thumb drive. He'd put that in, and that would go out through Tor, and all of his nefarious activities were done under the cloak of encryption. The funny thing is, Tor is really good, and it's teed off the NSA that it's so good. And NRL is just proud of the fact that they've come up with an encryption technique that's, stymieing the NSA. The Russians don't like it because it's just darn good. So that's why there are all of these funded programs by the NSA and by the Russians to try to crack Tor so that they can track who's actually using it. So even though the NSA is funding programs to crack Tor, tour is also supported by other agencies of the government. So tour was really developed by the federal government initially through an NRL initiative, and it's gone on. So it's got a great history, and that was a nice email, and it has come into the news more recently because there was a company, a hacker, that discovered a vulnerability in Tor that they highly publicized, and so that was in the news. And there was also in the news that the Russians were paying about $100,000 if somebody could find a vulnerability in Tor. And NSA has a similar kind of program. So that's why it was in the news. And then, of course, Edward Snowden used it. We got an email from Ian in Greenbelt. Ian in Greenbelt. First time that Ian has sent us an email. Dear a Tech Talk, explain the hotspot on my cell phone. I have this feature, but I can't activate it without paying some additional fees. Is it worth it? I just don't quite know what it is. I just found it in the menu. I enjoy the show every Saturday. Thanks, Ian in Greenbelt. Well, with a mobile hotspot, with a mobile phone hotspot, you can create an internet connection for up to 5 mobile devices on a 3G phone or up to 10 mobile devices on a 4G LTE smartphone. So what happens is you activate the hotspot, and you can create your own secure Wi-Fi network. So suppose somebody's got an iPad without internet access, and you're out in the middle of nowhere, and you've got internet access through your cell phone. Just turn on your hotspot, and then the iPad can connect to your cell phone, and then the iPad's got internet access, which is kind of nice. And you don't have to buy an iPad with internet access, which costs a lot more money.
Sure.
You don't have to buy an iPad with 3G or 4G access, which costs a lot more money. Just get a regular Wi-Fi enabled one and connect it through your hotspot. So it's very convenient, this hotspot. You don't need any USB cable. Multiple users can use it. Now, you've got to keep in mind, though, that when you are connected to your hotspot, you're using your data plan. So if you let somebody connect to your hotspot and they all of a sudden start streaming a lot of videos, you could eat up a lot of data. So just be mindful of that. Now, the other thing that's interesting about hotspots, they support both Bluetooth hotspots as well as Wi-Fi hotspots. So when you activate the hotspot, you can connect to the hotspot, the internet access, either through a Bluetooth connection or through a Wi-Fi connection. So, for instance, Google Glass connects to the hotspot on my iPhone using Bluetooth. It doesn't use the Wi-Fi connection. It uses the Bluetooth connection. So that's actually quite good. Now, the rub is that many carriers charge extra for activating the mobile hotspot. And this is really unfair. You've already paid for the data.
Right.
And all you're doing is connecting to use your own data that you paid for, and they charge you more without giving you more data allotment.
Do you know which providers don't charge to do that?
Well, if you've got an iPhone, you've got to pay for it. But if you've got an Android, you can actually install a hotspot app, and you don't have.
Do you know how much it costs?
It's about $10 a month.
Oh, forget that.
But what I did, I've got Verizon, and I got the what they call the Anywhere plan, where you can hook up to 10 devices.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got the Anywhere plan, the hotspot was just treated as another device. So in that case, it didn't cost me anything.
Oh, okay.
But in order to get the Anywhere plan, I had to give up my unlimited data plan that I had. And so, you know, which I hated to do because I'd had my unlimited data plan grandfathered in forever. But I went back and looked at the data. I hardly use any data because I'm not a big movie watcher.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so I had unlimited data, but I was using less than a gigabyte a month.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, okay, I guess it would be nice to have it in the future, but because it turns out whenever I use any high data applications, I'm always on Wi-Fi,
uh-huh,
either at home or at work. And the only and when I'm in between home and work, I'm in the car, and it's just emails. So
right.
I gave that up, and so I've activated my hotspot. And without my hotspot activated, I couldn't have connected Google Glass. So
mm-hmm.
I'm glad that I was able to do that. So that was a great email from Ian in Greenbelt. Wanted to know about hotspots. We got an email from Duke in Ohio. Another Ohio email.
Yes.
Dear Tech Talk, I enjoyed your Google Glass segment last week. Now, I'm trying to determine whether to buy a Google Glass. Please provide some additional reviews about the strengths and weaknesses of Google Glass. Now, I'd like to take this to a private club here in Ohio. Go to a private club here in Ohio and have some fun. How much is it, and where can I buy it? Love the show, Duke in Ohio.
He's of those Ohio people, it seems.
Yeah, you know, Duke. I'd be careful you take it as a private. I don't know what kind of private club you're talking about, but I'd be very careful if you take that Google Glass.
I have a funny feeling it's not a golf club.
They might rip this Google Glass right off your face. So you have to be very careful of that. In fact, there are some bars that will bar Google Glass because people view it's like a violation of privacy.
Yeah.
So I mean I've been worrying around this week. Nobody cares if I wear it to McDonald's. So I can go to McDonald's. It's not an issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can go to a Chinese restaurant. But if you go to a bar where people just don't want picture, you know, not that they're doing anything wrong. They just don't want pictures of them sitting at the bar drinking a scotch.
Mm-hmm.
They really don't like somebody going around with Google Glass because they can't tell whether the video is on or they can't tell whether the picture is on. So I could be sitting there with the video on. And I could be recording everything someone's saying. I could have a picture of them. And then I click a button, and it's automatically uploaded to YouTube. Just like happened last week with David. We were playing with the Google Glass in the studio during the show last week. David just was randomly hitting the glasses trying to get him to do something.
Accidentally touched the button.
He uploaded the entire video by mistake to YouTube. Now, you know, that actually could be dangerous.
Could be very dangerous.
Could be very dangerous. Now, fortunately, we weren't doing anything inappropriate in that video, but I could see where somebody could just be doing something inappropriate, and they say, oops, it's on YouTube.
It's on YouTube now.
And now it's already going viral. Okay, let's talk about Google Glass. First of all, rumor has it that the second version, Google Glass 2, is going into production. So my advice is don't buy Google Glass right now. Wait for the 2 to come out.
Okay.
Because it's, you know, we've got one Google Glass, one at the Stratford, which we're using it for testing in the classrooms to see if we can use this for content generation. We only bought one because we know that they're going to be improved Google Glass coming out. So I would just wait actually a little bit. I'd probably also go to that private club and ask what their policy is about you wearing Google Glass. Because I'm going to think if you show up there with Google Glass, he'll put a bag over your head.
Or worse.
Or worse. So
or your butt in the street.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, with Google Glass, I mean, it's actually not, I think, ready for prime time yet. There are a number of issues. It's fun to play with, but it's got issues. So let's go down them. Navigation.
Okay.
I can use navigation on this, and it uses Google Maps for navigation, which now I don't like as well as Waze because Google Maps does not dynamically respond to traffic. And Waze maps are actually more accurate than Google Maps now. But I can only use Google Maps. And the problem is it's so distracting because it goes off. I'm always fiddling with my glasses. It's probably safe, but it's not as safe as just having Waze, you know, on my phone, and it just talks to me through the Bluetooth audio system. Because the Google Glass, you know, when I'm at navigation, it turns off, and sometimes it's hard to get it to turn back on again. And then the screen is quite small, so you can't get the big picture. But it's, if you don't have any other navigation system, it's okay. But it's probably quite distracting, and if you're in a very complicated maneuver, you got to make turns and everything, I think you'd have trouble with that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to take a little bit more work there. Now, pictures and video. Now, what they've done is they want you to only be in the Google ecosystem, so they upload everything automatically to Google Plus. Which, by the way, you've got to be really careful on how it's loaded to Google Plus. If you've got friends on Google Plus, they might see everything that just automatically uploads and you don't even know it. So you've got to really watch the permissions, because when you click on this thing and it just says share it, it just, you know, you've got a list of things, and suppose you want to share it to the public. Suppose the option to share to the public is the current is the current option that's up there, and you want to cancel it, you just do a down swipe to cancel the current command. The problem is the down swipe doesn't always work. So one time I had some random picture, and it said I was going to send it to somebody, and I didn't want to send it to somebody. I hit a down swipe, but when I hit the down swipe, it actually sent this random picture to this guy. So I'm thinking, well,
that's not good.
That's not good. So then I emailed him and said, sorry, I sent you this picture. Just forget it. It was a mistake. But it was just a random picture, and it went to, because it's only connected to my Google contacts, so it went to the first guy on the list whose name started with an A.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay. So I wrote him. I said, just forget that picture. I mean, it wasn't a special picture, but it'd just be confusing why I would be sending him that picture.
Sure.
And the other thing is, these pictures, they get on Google Plus. Like I'll do a video, which will be a giant file. It gets on Google Plus. I can't forward that video to anybody unless they have a Gmail account or unless they have a Google Plus account. Now, finally, if you fiddle around with the menus, you can find a way to download stuff from Google Plus to your computer as a zipped file. Then you can expand the zipped file into files. But now the problem is I've got now this giant video file. Normally, if it were on my iPhone, I would send it by iMessage. It's too big to send by email.
Mm-hmm.
So then I'm stuck. And so they kind of lock you into this Google ecosystem, which, is uncomfortable because I'm already locked in the Apple ecosystem, mm-hmm. and they just don't get along very well. Now, sharing limitations, I said you've got to use Google Plus and the Gmail account. So, I've got a whole bunch of contacts in my Outlook account. I can't import any of those contacts. So, I have got to log into the Glass application on my PC, and I've got to manually add contacts to Glass, and then I can get them. There's no way to import Outlook contacts. So, the whole thing is designed to lock you in, and I just really don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in turn, you can send emails. Now, and you've got everything is voice activated, so I can say send an email. Of course, I can only send it to somebody who's a Gmail account, and then I can just start speaking. And I tell you, the voice recognition is fantastic. The problem is that if I pause for like you got a thought, maybe you pause mm-hmm. for like 3 seconds, it shuts it down, compresses it, and says, "Where do you want to send it?" And you can't go back.
Oh,
I can't. Like when you're dictating something, you have a pause between sentences. The normal think pause that I have between sentences is too long. So I end up writing these emails that truncate too quickly. And that's the same thing if I dictate notes to it. So that's a small problem that I had with it. Now the bone conduction audio, the audio system, it vibrates. There's a point that vibrates on the portion of the Google Glass that goes over your ear, and it presses against the bone right behind your ear. And that's the audio connection. And that is surprisingly good. I really like that. And voice recognition is extremely accurate. I can talk, and it just gets it right away. Now, as far as receiving calls, I can receive calls with Google Glass. They come to my phone. The Google Glass is connected to my Bluetooth hotspot on my phone, and I can talk, and I can hear them through the bone conduction audio. But when I'm talking to someone, the audio quality that they receive is not that good because the mic is somewhere in the glasses and it's not directly in front of me. So people say, I can't hear you that well. I can hear them, but they can't hear me that well. So I end up giving up on Google Glass and just picking up the phone and talking to them normally. So it's not quite ready for primetime yet, but it's a lot of fun to play with. It's probably worth experimenting. Now, here's some of the apps that I've got. They've got a Compass app. So you can actually, you're going around, somebody says go east, you just say, okay, Glass, and you say, give me compass, and the compass comes up and it shows you which direction you're going. As you turn around, you can look at the directions. They've got Duolingo. This is a way to learn. It has flashcards, and you can actually go through basically a one semester language class, learning Spanish, learning French, and it'll just flash the cards up. You'll hear what the word is, and then you can actually, as you're just going through your day, you can learn a language. That's kind of a neat application.
Pretty good, yeah.
Evernote's integrated where you can upgrade you can send notes to yourself through Evernote. You'll have the same problem that when you dictate, if you pause too much, then you got a problem. They've got a Facebook, and you can, you know, you can upload pictures and comments to Facebook, but it could be a little dangerous.
Sure. Well,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's just like I installed the YouTube application and we uploaded a YouTube video, so. You know, you just might have things shooting up the face. Now, theoretically, you can control exactly what goes up, but for all the reasons that I said, difficulty of working the menuing system and swiping down and selecting things, it could be a problem. And then the rights, who's allowed to see it on Facebook, it's, you know, how that's going to be set up. Gmail works. Gmail is integrated quite nicely, as you'd expect. It works really well. Google Calendar works well if you use Google Calendar. I use the Outlook Calendar, and I can't import that into this thing because it's not in the Google ecosystem. See, at least Apple lets me bring my Outlook Calendar into my iPhone. So there's not a good integration yet. This is why I said it's not ready for prime time. Google Now is good. It gives you events that are coming up. That it gives you what they call these little cards that you look at and events that are there. Google Now, it's quite nice. Like I drove down to Richmond the other day, and so Google Glass knew that I'd be going back home, and so it gave me a traffic report on how the traffic was like going back to Northern Virginia. Just sort of gave me that as one of my updates, which is kind of a Google Now deal. That's a nice feature. Of course, it's integrated to Google Plus. They just love to get you into Google Plus, and then they don't want you to get out of it. Live stream is neat. I can say start broadcasting, and I can broadcast a live video stream, and I can post it directly to the web, right from Glass.
That could also be a problem.
That could be a problem. Now the problem is when these glasses start broadcasting a live video stream. This is at 720p, 720 progressive. It's not HD. It's not bad, but it's not HD. 720p. After about 5 or 6 minutes, it get extremely hot, and then I get the message that it may be too hot to operate. So this is not really set up for a continuous stream of
sure.
video. But you can do a few minutes of video, and it's okay. And the live stream's kind of nice. I like MindMeister. You can mind map, and so I can just say I want to do notes. Take a note. And it will come up, and I can just speak to it as long as I don't pause too much. It's the same old pause deal, and it goes into my mind map. And so I've been using the MindMeister application for just keeping track of thoughts as I was, you know, going around. Sort of very nice. I like Shazam. I can just, you know, I'm listening to, I'm in a, you know, somebody has their music on, and I can just say, okay, Glass, recognize this, and it gives me the name of the song and who the artist is automatically. That's great if you want to really look like you know music. I mean, I need help with this because knowing all the latest songs is not really my forte.
Not your forte.
I'm kind of locked into 3 decades ago.
That's okay. Nothing wrong with that.
Now, I like Star Charts. This is another application. I'm only talking about the apps that I've downloaded. They got about 100 apps. I've just downloaded about 20. Star Charts is sort of neat. You actually look up in the sky, and you'll see the stars, and then it will superimpose over the stars the names of the constellations and the shape. So you look around, and the constellations shift as you're looking in different directions. So it's a great way to learn the constellations. So you got kids, they could look up and see. That's a very neat application. Stopwatch is nice, you know, if you want to keep track of, you know, you're running, you want to keep track of time. Trackendo, this gives the last known GPS location of your Google Glass. This is what I wish I would have had installed with the first one that got stolen. But Trackendo was not installed on it, so I couldn't do it. Now, this could be very convenient for Twitter, because Twitter, you know, it's 140 characters, fairly short. And so you could just speak something Twitter. You could just speak it, and it's up.
Mm-hmm.
But also dangerous.
Of course.
I mean, you could just be really teed off and say, I'm going to tweet this and just say something. And pretty
and boom,
soon,
it's everywhere.
It's everywhere, and then you regret it. Tumblr is there. This is easy, uploading of pictures. That's like a social website for sharing pictures. What's around is sort of neat. You just say, Google, what's around? And it gives you all of the nearby attractions combined with a compass. So if you're and as you turn around and point in a different direction, it shows you what features are in that direction and how far they are. So as you're just going around in a circle, you see all the different features, and you can filter this on restaurants, on parks, whatever you want. It's kind of nice. It actually integrates probably with Wikipedia or something. I don't know. It's a very convenient interface. I like that what's around. The word lens is nice. I can look at it translates five languages. So I could look at a sign in Spanish, and it translates the Spanish sign into English in the same font. So it looks like the actual sign has just been translated and reformatted in English. And so you just look at it a while, and then pretty soon the English just appears. I mean, so it's that is actually a very clever thing.
Yeah.
Now, word of the day, this, you know, these people, you want to learn a new word every day. So every day I install that up. Every day I get a new word, and then I look at the definition. And then, of course, YouTube is very tightly integrated. And as we saw last week, you can upload a YouTube video. So I'd say it's a lot of fun, but I would not spend $1,500 for it now, Duke. And that was a very good email.
Yes, it was. So, Doc, you want to get more emails.
Yeah, we love your emails. So send us an email, your emails to techtalk@stratford.edu, and we'll cover them on the show, or I may even write back to you directly.
There you go. It's Saturday morning. This is Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2. Be right back. More after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University Innovative Approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Now it is time for...
Wait a minute.
Profiles in IT.
Wait for it. Wait for it.
Thank you, Mr. Big Voice. Don't rush yourself.
Line of the day.
That's right. We're going to feature Tahir El-Gamal. Tahir El-Gamal. Dr. Tahir El-Gamal is an information security leader and cryptographer. He is recognized in the industry as the father of SSL, which, of course, is Secure Socket Layer, and that's the encryption protocol that allows you to talk to a website with an encrypted data stream to ensure your privacy.
Mm-hmm.
Tahir El-Gamal was born August 18, 1955, in Cairo, Egypt. His father was a high-level official in the government, and he oversaw the health department in some area. He wasn't in IT. He was more of a health department professional. Very early on, Tahir loved numbers. He loved to play with numbers. It was his hobby. He was a good mathematician. You know, what he said, I saw some quotes. He says, you know, the thing about numbers, you know, they're always predictable. Once you do a calculation a certain way, you get the same answer. You can always count on numbers. They don't let you down. So he just loved numbers. He was not very good at linguistics, and he said whenever he had to turn in a term paper, they were absolutely terrible. He was a terrible writer, but he loved math. So his essays were were a sorry sight to be seen, but he still did graduate from high school in 1972. He received a Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering from Cairo University in 1977. Then he moved to the U.S. to go to school, and he received a Master of Science from Stanford University in 1981 and a Ph.D. from Stanford in 1984. Both of them were in electrical engineering. In 1985, El-Gamal published a paper. This was his pivotal paper. It was titled A Public Key Crypto System and a Signature Scheme Based on Discrete Logarithms.
Huh?
Okay, this is where he did the public-private key encryption thing for you know, exchanging keys so you can do the encryption and still do the de-encryption. In this, he proposed the design of what has now become called the El-Gamal Discrete Log Crypto System and the El-Gamal Signature Scheme. The latter scheme became the basis of the Digital Signature Algorithm, DSA, which was adopted by the National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST, as a digital signature standard.
Those are catchy names, by the way.
Yeah, these are. Yeah, I know you're really into this. Well, this is. Well, let's put it this way: this was a pivotal paper that actually heavily influenced encryption methods on the internet and by the standards group. He also participated in SET, the credit card payment protocol, as well as a number of other internet payment schemes. Where, of course, encryption was very important. In 1988, he joined InfoChip as VP of Engineering. In 1991, he accepted a job as Director of Engineering at RSA, which was a security company. RSA basically, developed one of the top encryption methods. In 1993, he joined Oki as VP of Advanced Technologies, as the VP of the Advanced Technology Center. Then this is where he made his pivotal move that actually brought him to secure socket layer. He joined Netscape in 1995. This is when Netscape was just getting started. He served as chief scientist. He was the driving force behind secure socket layer. You see, Netscape knew they needed a secure way to communicate with websites. So they were actually pioneering the standards that would be used on the internet at Netscape. Netscape released the version 3 of Secure Socket Layer in 1996. Okay, it turned out version 1 was never released because it was so bad. Version 2 was released, but it had a lot of security flaws in it. So they rushed out version 3. Version 3 stuck. So version 3 was released in 1996. It was published by the Internet Engineering Task Force, IETF, in a historical document, which is RFC 6101, this is where they document all their standards. And the basic algorithm that formed the foundation for secure socket layer was written by Taher El-Gamal. Now, so he was there from 95 until 98. This is during the really formative years at Netscape, and this is where he became known as Father of Secure Socket Layer. And he was interviewed recently. He said that accomplishment is what he's proudest of, because that encryption methodology has been so widely deployed and has been so important to the internet. In 1999, he became president of the Information Security Group for Kroll O'Gary. And then in 2001, he founded a company called Securify. He served initially as CFO and then later as CTO, Chief Technology Officer. He eventually sold Securify to Secure Computing, and now it's part of McAfee. He was always been in sort of this whole encryption security area. In October 2006, he joined Tumbleweed Communications as Chief Technology Officer. Tumbleweed was acquired by Axway. He continued serving as Chief Technology Officer for Axway. And now Axway, the primary product was a secure messaging system, yet again, you know, based on encryption. And in 2009, he founded Identity Mind in Palo Alto, California, served as director until 2012. In 2012, he became CEO of First Information Security, which was a Middle East, which was a security company in the Middle East. He was going to these developing Middle East countries to help them deploy secure banking systems and payment systems when they were all just coming on the internet in a big way. In February of 2003, he accepted a position as Chief Technology Officer of Security for Salesforce.com, and he's still there. He was recipient of the Lifetime Achievement Award at the RSA Conference in 2009. Now, I saw an interview that he gave, and he said, they said, what's your hobby? He says, well, I like to read number theory books for fun. That's my hobby. So I just, I just curl up with a good number theory book. And he just loves numbers.
Yeah.
Gandhi is his role model. He admires the quiet strength of Gandhi. So there you've got all you want to know about Taher El-Gamal.
Interesting.
Well, father of secure socket layer.
Hope everybody was paying attention because there is a free dinner or lunch riding on this. It's no more lunch. It's just dinner, right, Doc?
Either lunch or dinner.
Lunch or dinner at Stratford University. So stand by for the pop quiz coming up next here on Tech Talk Radio, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2. Be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now it's time for Washington's most popular and longest running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome back to Classroom of the Airways.
Yes.
It's also Classroom of the Internet because we stream directly over the
internet. Of course we do.
Reaching worldwide. Now, if you get the correct answer to the pop quiz, which is how we assess whether you're listening, you'll win two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room, the Karim Dining Room. All you have to do is reach us either through a traditional phone line or through other methods, which we'll talk about later.
Of course we will.
Earlier in the show, I was talking about Taher El-Gamal, Dr. Taher El-Gamal. He is, of course, father of Secure Socket Layer. Where was he working when he developed the Secure Socket Layer algorithm that was ultimately deployed for the internet?
Okay. There's your question. If you got the answer, call us right now. If you're calling from west of Cairo, Egypt, it's 877-936-9333. If you're calling from north of the Dulles Toll Road, it's 877-936-9333. Otherwise, everybody else anywhere on the planet can call us on 877-936-9333, also known as the wildcard line. But as mentioned, you have other ideas.
Yes, if you're calling in from Siberia, you can reach us through with Skype. Simply connect to Tech Talk Radio 1, and your call will be forwarded directly to the studio. And by the way, that will be an encrypted phone call.
Okay, good.
Okay, so here we go. So let's talk about my pet peeve of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Car navigation systems.
Uh-oh.
I am just fed up with car navigation. I've got a Lexus, and I paid a lot of money for this navigation system. First of all, the maps are out of date when the car leaves the lot. Most these car navigation systems are on a three-year update cycle. They've got like five zones or something, and they'll rotate around the country, and your zone is updated every 3 years. So chances are, or you could get a car where your zone is already 2 years out of date.
No kidding.
And so, and then if you want, so you got to find out when they update your zone. And if you want to get your zone updated, you've got to pay them like $400 or something. That teased me off.
Yeah.
Secondly, you don't have live congestion data. Very limited. You can pay extra for a satellite connection that will give you congestion data, but it's quite limited. And now I've gotten used to Waze. I get congestion data real time with my Waze app on my iPhone, and it just comes right down without any delay. The third thing, you can't do anything with this car navigation system when you're moving. You know, if you want to change something, you got to stop the car.
Yep.
Even if the passenger wants to change it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a poorly designed interface. You can barely use the voice recognition, and it's a premium price for an inferior product. What I want is to get rid of these stinking car navigation systems. I'm going to be able to hook my iPhone directly up to the car and see my iPhone displayed there.
I just put my iPad up on the dashboard.
I know. So there you go. Pet peeve of the week.
The party don't start till I walk in.
Hi, folks. This is David Byrd.
Don't stop, make it pop.
So I guess that means we have a guest.
Did I miss the show?
Almost.
it's almost. You know, I've run in Google Glass again, David. You are a YouTube, hero.
Yes. Yeah, you actually uploaded a video last week, unbeknownst to you.
Unbeknownst to me.
The video, while you were playing with the Google Glass, trying to get it to work.
I was upping it.
You uploaded it to YouTube.
Wow. Did I mean to do that? I don't know.
Then I got a message congratulating me for my first upload to YouTube from Glass.
Wow.
And so there we went. It's a good thing that we were just on the up and up in this show, and there was nothing,
nothing.
That it was no pants
nothing,
Saturday.
Nothing kinky on that YouTube.
Speaking of no pants, you guys are dressed like it's August. Oh, that's right. It is August.
It is August.
I'm freezing.
I know. It's 12 degrees
in here. Okay, here's the thing. I decided I'm going to wear, it's August, I'm going to put on shorts. I walked out of the house this morning, and it was freezing.
Freezing.
Yeah, and
freezing.
I said, should I go in and change? And I said, no, I'm committed.
And I'm in dressing.
I'm committed.
Wrong.
I'm gonna go in shorts.
I got it all wrong. You guys tuck your shirts into your shorts?
No,
really?
I don't.
What's that all about? Really?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay, Doc. Well, you have a certain CEO.
Well,
you get to a certain pay grade, I
bet you tuck in Hawaiian shirts into your jeans, don't you?
Oh yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Or he doesn't own Hawaiian shirts.
He doesn't own any Hawaiian shirts.
No.
Have I missed any big stuff? Big, huge.
Nothing.
No, we were talking about secure socket layer.
Oh, by the way, I checked the 7-Eleven this morning. That drone is for sale for $53.
Wow.
That must be one high-quality drone.
High-quality.
It must be a high-quality drone.
Looks like one of those models you got at the
I'm thinking
store.
Balsa wood.
I'm thinking Jim should get that drone for the traffic reports.
After your $1,200 deal, everything else is just like trash compared
to
that.
Well,
that's nice. That's
right.
Nice. Very nice. Have I missed any new equipment? iPhone 6?
No.
Is that real?
We were talking off the air about that.
I don't know what's real. I think it's coming out this fall.
And who cares?
I'm just waiting for something.
I think it's their reaction to the Samsung big screen. I think they're going to
Yeah, they're
like
just, they're chasing Samsung with
so
the big screen.
So basically you got a mini pad in your pocket.
I mean,
the
biggest thing on this is the bigger screen, and then they're using. Then
what are you holding your Google Glass for? What you're talking?
He's afraid you're going to steal them.
Steal it.
Then they've got the sapphire screen.
How insulting!
Yeah,
he takes his Google Glass
David
and moves
comes
it away.
In.
Yeah.
I'm going to hold, because he's afraid you're going to upload something inappropriate on YouTube.
I was afraid that David would come here and like upload some picture to YouTube. And then
these hot shorts looks you guys
have. That's right.
Yeah, that's hot. Yeah,
so the thing, the biggest thing is the sapphire right. screen, which you won't scratch. Mm-hmm. See, sapphire screens have been used on very expensive watches for years.
Mm.
Super high-end watches have had sapphire covers.
How much is this going to add to the cost of an iPhone?
Yeah, what's that?
Okay, the
was it $400? Okay, no, $500.
I don't know how much they're going to charge. Google's cost, say for Gorilla Glass, the cost of their wholesale cost for the screen was $3. For Sapphire, their wholesale cost is $16.
Okay,
so it's adding $13 to the production price.
So it won't add hundreds of dollars to the end.
Well, hold it. $13 production price probably is $200 to your price.
Yeah, exactly.
It's probably like an 8-to-1. It's like an 8-to-1 multiplier, Jim.
Oh, good grief.
Yeah. Well, welcome to marketing.
That's right.
Come on. You know the story.
This is how people get rich.
No, if you can survive on $500 a month, does that mean your boss is going to pay you $500? No.
No.
You need more dough.
Exactly.
Something like that.
So the other thing, they're supposed to have near-field communication in this thing.
What does that mean?
Which is for these payment deals, you just put your phone close to the cash register and you make your payment.
Oh.
You know, it's so
that sounds dangerous, too.
Yeah, I don't like that idea.
No. So this is like, and so they're getting a lot of payment schemes set up on near-field. Yeah. And so you've got to be within 3 inches or 4 inches to do the transaction.
Okay.
So you just kind of get up there close, and then you can do the transaction. Yeah. Yes. So that is the, and they were hoping that near field communication will come out with iPhone 5, and everybody's disappointed that it wasn't there.
No.
So now it looks like it's going to come out with 6.
Huh.
And so we may see some standardization on payments. I mean, aren't you kind of fed up to having to take a credit card out and have them scan it? Wouldn't you just rather have them like scan your phone?
No.
No, I'm not comfortable with that.
Not after David was uploading YouTube videos by accident. Yeah, I don't think I need to be giving all of my money to 7-Eleven.
Thank goodness we weren't doing something spooky. You know what I'm saying?
Like we would ever do that.
It could have been an absolute disaster, Dave.
Yeah, grass skirt.
It could have gone. Yeah, if we'd have been wearing our grass skirts that day, it would have been
grass
bad.
Skirt Saturday.
It would have gone viral.
Yeah, big time viral. Anyway, I'm glad you got congratulations from the Glass people. The Glass people?
Yeah, no, YouTube congratulations.
Oh, YouTube.
Well, they're doing that just to stroke you to say,
now,
hey, do some more.
Now, you know all this net neutrality stuff. They've extended the comment period on net neutrality.
Oh, they have.
You know, the FCC has comments. You know how many comments they have so far on net neutrality?
I'm waiting, Doc. Tell me.
I know this is very important.
This is
1.1 million comments.
Wow.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of keystrokes.
Okay. Now,
900,000 from me.
Now, here's the deal. There's only been one other time the FCC's gotten more comments on a comment period.
Right.
Can you guess what that might have been?
Janet Jackson.
You are right.
Thank you.
You are right.
Thank you.
Oh, what a genius you
the
are.
The Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction.
How long did I wait? How long did I wait before I pulled the trigger on that answer?
Zero seconds. He gets
I'll
the tickets
you,
this week.
He gets my ring, pal.
When it comes to Janet Jackson, you are all over it.
So to speak.
So to speak, right.
Oh. Easy now. Easy.
If it's appropriate.
This is a kid's show. No, it's not a kid's show. No, it's not. It's an adult show.
It's not that kind of an adult show.
No, it's not. Stop swimming. Just keep treading water.
Okay, yeah, right. Dave. The other big news is you know the Mars rover's been driving around Mars for a while. They've now got a mileage record. They're driving around Mars.
Oh, really? Oil
they've
change
reached,
already?
They've reached 25. They've driven 25 miles on Mars.
What's that like? $3 billion a mile? I mean,
it could
no
be.
No hybrid.
Do they need an oil change now?
Really?
So they've just been driving around looking, but they've driven 25 miles.
What are they doing? Are they looking for things, or are we just checking?
Well,
out
no,
the tires?
They went to the edge of this crater where they thought there would be some new things exposed,
some
and then
water.
They kind of drill down, and then they're checking for. Moisture, looking for signs of life.
No Martians.
They haven't found any Martians yet.
Wow.
But they have found evidence of water.
Right.
And they're former water, and there could be some interstitial water.
Can you imagine this happening, Doc? They send back a picture of a Milky Way wrapper that was left there. How'd that get there?
Wait a minute.
How did a Milky Way wrapper get on the surface of Mars?
One of the Martian
somebody
monster
got
people.
Here before we did.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy, Doc.
Yeah. So there you go. See that's a big.
That's huge.
They're really proud of this. It was only designed to drive like a mile or two, and it was only supposed to be operating for just like
I'm
a year.
I'm assuming it's an electric motor or something like that.
Yeah, it's got an electric motor charged with solar cells.
Oh,
So that's
they can
that's
go what forever. They, it's a Prius, is what it is.
That's nice.
It's a Prius.
It's a Prius.
It's a pure. It's a Tesla. It's pure electric motor.
Get it right, Jimbo. Come on.
Sorry.
It's a Tesla.
That's what you get for not tucking your shorts.
Now here's the good news is the Russians had previously driven a rover around the moon.
And we know how well they build it.
Yeah, right.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. Until recently, they had the mileage record.
Oh,
see,
24?
24.2 miles.
There you go, Janet Jackson.
24.2 miles. Yeah. So NASA said, we have got to beat the Russians.
Wow.
And when they got to 25 miles, they broke out the champagne.
Wow.
So there you go. So that's the other big news, Dave.
That's big news.
I know you're excited about that.
Huge news. I'm glad I came down.
I'm glad you did, too.
I did not know that.
No. Now you got some fun stuff to talk about upstairs.
And that means I have to leave now.
Okay.
Yes. Okay.
Doc, it's your swan song, so I'm getting out of your way, sir.
Okay. Right.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Doc. Okay. Thank you so much.
I'm not the doctor. He's the doctor.
Yeah, I know. Go away. Let's see. We have gotten ourselves way out of whack here. Let's go to the phones. We're going to go to line number one. This is Sebastian calling from Falls Church. Sebastian, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Good. Okay, Doc, ask the question.
Yeah,
we're
talking about the man who was father of Secure Socket Layer, Taher El-Gamal. Where was he working when he invented the Secure Socket Layer?
Tommy was working at Netscape.
That is correct.
Thank you.
Win two tickets to fine dine at the Escoffier Dining Room, the Karim Dining Room. Stay on the line, and we'll get those tickets out to you next week.
Yep, Sebastian, thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Hang on 1 second. Andrew will pick up and take your information. All right, Doc, we have no time for a break. We're just going to run out the clock here. If you would
something. Oh, yeah. Okay, this guy had a Dropbox file, and he lost 8,000 personal records.
Jeez.
Now, he was co-founder and CTO of a photographic software platform called Virtual Rig Studio. He's been using Dropbox since 2009. He had 8,000 of his personal files. Most of these were pictures. And then he ran out of hard drive space. So then he got the idea. They have this feature where you can back it up on Dropbox, but then delete it from your hard drive. So I thought, well, I've run out of hard drive space, so I'm just gonna use that feature. So he clicked the photographs he wanted to delete from his hard drive, and then he said, and then the rest will just and what he didn't check will be left on his hard drive, but everything will be backed up to the Dropbox folder. So he clicked on that thing, and then Dropbox locked up.
Great.
And then he closed it. And then he opened it. And he said, okay, this thing must have transferred up there. And Dropbox deleted all the files from his hard drive. But it actually also deleted them from the main server
this
when it locked
good.
Up. So he didn't actually realize that he had lost 8,000 files. He
wow.
thought they were safe. So then a couple of months later, he went to try to find them, and he discovered they were missing.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that Dropbox will only keep your deleted files for 60 days, and then they're gone. So they're gone.
Gone.
8,000 images. So the key is you've got to keep it backed up in two places. He had it one place. He deleted one place. He should have had it on a hard drive. So
yeah.
bad backup. This was Dan Chern. Bad news. Listen, the show is over. We love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. Make certain to go to the Stratford University webpage, which, of course, would be stratford.edu, and let them know that you heard about them on Tech Talk Radio.
Indeed. If you tuned in late or would like to hear this program again, it replays at 3 o'clock this afternoon. See you next week.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
And we got baseball coming up on Federal News Radio later on today. The Nats take on the Pirates at home this evening. First pitch is at 7 o'clock. Pregame, of course, starts at 6:30. The forecast for today and for the game, mostly sunny and nice. Going up to 85 right now outside our studios in Northwest Washington. 75 degrees. It's 10 a.m.
Press conference